Meantime, Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada joins me. Just talking off the top about the story about the Arizona Coyotes looking at ASU using the 5,000 seat facility as a temporary home, pending, of course, them getting approval to build a new arena in Tempe. Just we'll start ride brush and then narrow it down. Your general thoughts on this story, Elliot?
I haven't been able to read Craig's story yet because it had like a connection issue with it.
It's up.
You know,
it's up now.
Okay. Yeah, well, I haven't been able to read it yet. But you and I, we've been working on this one, and Craig, to his credit, got it out first. So let me just tell you everything I've heard without reading what Craig wrote. Number one, I think this is pretty much a done deal. I think that. There's definitely people around who are under the impression that this is what's going to happen next year. There could always be changes. The one thing we've learned about this story is don't make any dramatic pronouncements because things do change a lot. But I'm under the impression that this is pretty much a done deal and what we should expect to happen next year. The other thing is, the seating capacity is listed at 5,000, but I know there have been discussions about if they have to do some things to make it more NHL ready. There's a possibility that that capacity could drop, and
that would be
that would
be things like dressing rooms. I would imagine right out of the gate.
That's what I would assume it is, and that's one of the reasons that I was still working on it because I was trying to find out what the capacity actually might be. I know that the website, I guess, says 5,000, but there's a chance it could be less than that. Like, for example, I had one person who told me they think it could be 3,200 once it's all retrofit or once it's all fitted. But again, right. I don't know that to be true. I don't know what Craig has in his story. The other thing that I was told is that it's possible it might not be ready for the start of next year. So, you know, would they have to do what the Islanders did and go on a road trip at the start of the season? Or would they play somewhere else at the start of the season? But, you know, I think that all of those things are in play. And I will say this. There are a number of people who've told me over the last couple of weeks that they are expecting this to be the home of the team next year, assuming they stay in Arizona, which we're all expecting to be.
Well, let's pause on that because I would imagine that that would be contingent on the Coyotes getting the Tempe deal done. And we don't know whether that is going to happen. If it does, then I think the ASU plan goes into effect. But I do wonder, what happens if they don't get that deal?
I have no idea.
See, I was just mentioning, you know, the Montreal Expos theory, but for the NHL. Where, listen, if you've run out of places to play, you know, Gary Bettman has talked about this before, and this was, you know, cited with, you know, Atlanta, when you've, you know, run out of places either to play or run out of people to own the team, that's when you move. Now, a relocation doesn't really do the NHL financially any good, and it takes another, you know, it takes an expansion market off the map. If you're the NHL, maybe in this scenario, you do a hockey version of the Expos where, you know, they don't just move to Washington. They sell to MLB and then they put it up for auction. That team gets sold and then it goes. Could we see that with the Arizona Coyotes, the NHL taking control? It gets essentially sold, which de facto becomes an expansion fee and then gets relocated. So you relocate a team but pick up an expansion fee in the process.
You know, when you have talked about that on the podcast before. And someone called me about that and said that could happen. I mean, you know, like, look, I always, what's the default position, Jeff? The default position is they stay there. That's what the league wants. That's what the league wants, right? And so, but if it doesn't work and they can't get the Tempe deal done, then, you know, where are we going? And that could be one of the outcomes. I mean, the other thing here that, you know, that I'm very curious about, and is the reaction of the Players Association. And the reason is that, well, you know, if, you know, Brad Marchand is ripping tweets at the Hurricanes, Like, what's he going to have to say about a 5,000 or 3,200 seat facility in the NHL? I mean, I am going to be curious about that because, you know, like that's like I don't know what the like I had heard that when they presented the gross revenue figures at the Board of Governors in, I guess, December, the Kraken were, or not the Kraken, but the Coyotes were down, I think, like 47% this year. Wow. So, you know, like I think that, so on an average game night. So my question is, you know, can you make a case that this could be better? But it's good, you know, it's, I mean, I haven't seen, you know, a lot of the reaction yet, but I knew, like, when I was working on this story, I knew people were nervous about it because there's no way you could put a good face on an NHL rink having 5,000 or less seats. Right. So I'm really curious about this.
You know, one of the things that I wonder here, I always sort of look for different angles on these stories, and I wonder if this is, or maybe at least part of this story, is about trying to get Glendale back to the table. I mean, they've already said, we're not interested in having you back as a tenant, but now all of a sudden those dates vanish. And if there is another building for the Coyotes to go into, all of a sudden, does that do anything to warm Glendale into welcoming them back on this, you know, temporary, you know, 3 to 4 year term until they can get their other building built, which, as we all know, is going to be a competitor to Gila River Arena. That doesn't sit well, certainly, with Glendale, but that's, you know, guaranteed 3 years, maybe even four, of revenue for the city of Glendale. I'm not saying that this whole story and all these efforts are, you know, posturing to get a better deal out of Glendale, but do you think there might be anything to that?
Well, I just think that I know that there are people who felt, and again, I got this impression working on this. I know that there are people who felt that if the Coyotes simply wrote a check to Glendale, a bigger check, a guaranteed check, whatever you want to say, that this would work out, right? I don't know if that's true. I've had people dispute that. Like, that's the toughest thing about this particular story is that with every question you ask, three more questions come up, right? It's okay. It's difficult to put a handle on it. Now, I've had people tell me that they think absolutely if they write a check to Glendale that makes the city happy, they get to play there. But I've also had people tell me that, you know, Glendale's tired of them and doesn't want to deal with them anymore. I just think it's a tricky story, Jeff. It goes in different directions, and depending on the day, you get a different answer.
So I know this one is like trying to grab a handful of water. I get it. but here's another one. Practice facility. Do they practice at AFU?
Yes,
well?
I've heard. No, and again, this is another issue that was brought to me, was that I think there are some questions about, and I don't know how all the NCAA rules work, and I know that some of them have changed with the new, you know, what's called the NIL, that athletes are allowed to sell their name, image, and likeness. Yeah. Yes. But it was one of the tricky things I was trying to research is what are the rules now for mixing between college athletes and pros and how much they can mix. Right. Like, so I had been told that now, Jeff, I got differing answers as to how much of a problem that was or was not.
So I checked on that question on the weekend with someone very close to NCAA and was told that it wouldn't be an issue. There are situations where this does occur, where there is overlap, that it wouldn't be an NCAA compliance violation necessarily, and there are always ways to get around that. And NIL was cited as, you know, this is all moving towards this direction anyhow. So sometimes these issues can get massaged. But in Craig's piece, The one thing that he does mention is, and I'll read it to you, due to NCAA compliance issues, the Coyotes would not be permitted to use Sun Devil hockey team areas. They would have to build their own without contribution from ASU. I was told that, yeah, they wouldn't be allowed to obviously compensate Sun Devils hockey in any capacity. And I would imagine that, to the point about the practice facility, that would probably have to be something that the Coyotes build on their own and couldn't be essentially a gift to ASU at the same time.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. Like I said, these things are tricky, and just in working on the story over the last little while, one of the reasons I just didn't get it out as quickly as I would have liked it, and definitely now regret it, is that there's so many tricky questions. There's so many tricky situations to it, and but that's the thing. Like, so when I look at it now, my questions are, is the capacity for the Coyotes as a team actually 5,000, or is it less? When's the arena going to be ready? Like I said, I've had people tell me that they think it's basically a done deal. And I know, and I've been in Craig's shoes sometimes, when you write this thing, you don't want to make any crazy pronouncements, because if you're wrong, it gets put on like Old Takes Exposed and things like that. But, I think this is very, very far along, very, mm-hmm. very far along. And I know in the eyes of a lot of people, it is the most likely outcome for next year, assuming the team is in Arizona. And once again, I really believe that the team is going to be in Arizona for second and third choice.
On a scale of one to scorching.
The NHLPA question, I think, is a big one.
Yes,
I do.
Well, that dovetails into my next question, or maybe one brief area of discussion, and that is, on a scale of one to scorching, how are people in Quebec feeling?
I don't even know what's higher than...
with the Videotron Center sitting there.
What's higher than scorching?
I don't know. I always like those hot sauce charts when you go into restaurants and you try to look at the top one. It's like two people have tried it.
I know people don't like this, but I said this at the Board of Governors meetings, and I say it again now. The surest prediction of future behavior is past behavior. And the commissioner has done everything in his power to save Arizona. He is committed to Arizona. There is nobody who cares more about hockey than Arizona. And I would, even the people in Arizona, I don't know if they care as much about hockey as the commissioner does there. He has consistently done whatever he can to save that team, even when to many of us on the outside, it appears that, it just doesn't appear to be the smart thing to do. He is committed to it. He is determined to make it work. He's going to fight it until there's absolutely no options left. And I start with that being my default position, and it explains to me everything that happens.
Okay, pause on that story. Other stories around the NHL. Are we getting any closer to a decision on Evander Kane, to your knowledge?
I just know that they're constantly talking about it. I think it's getting closer to being done. I just don't think the NHL's in any incredible hurry. They're going to make sure that they get it done properly. And, one of the things I think the league is just saying here is that, we just want to make sure we don't miss anything. Whenever Kane's involved, there's controversy, and I think they just want to make sure that they don't miss anything. And so they're going to take their time, and they're going to do it the way they feel is properly. I think there is hope that he plays for the Oilers on Saturday night from the Oilers, but I don't know if that's going to happen. I know they met on... The Oilers were in Vancouver on Tuesday they played, right, Jeff? I don't know what day it is anymore.
Let me check here. All My Days Run Together as well.
Yeah.
They played on Monday.
Oh, they played on Monday. So.
Oh, no, wait a minute. I apologize. Hang on. No, they played. Where are my days here? Yeah, Tuesday against the Canucks.
Yeah. So I think they met with Kane on Monday. I think there's a hope he plays for them on Saturday. But I don't know if anybody's sure it's going to happen. The league has made it very clear that it's going to do this properly, and it will take all the time it needs, although I do think we are getting close to it.
Saturday, by the way, the Oilers face off against the Montreal Canadiens. That is part of Hockey Day in Canada. Quickly, a couple of things as well. Yesterday, Taylor Hall and Nathan MacKinnon, that was certainly a flashpoint. The game was excellent.
I thought that was more of an accident than
so anything. Did I. So did I. I know a lot of it depends on what jersey you're wearing in this, and the Colorado side of things says one thing and the Boston says the other. But I just look at it as if Hall, the principal point of contact is actually the hands of Nathan MacKinnon. Then his stick went up and he followed through.
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, it looks like, I always hate the term hockey play for a lot of things. I'll just say a hockey accident, which.
Well, also, Hall's not exactly known for incredibly dirty play, right? Like, it's.
No. If anything, he's been more of a victim than an instigator in his career.
The thing about too is that I feel for MacKinnon, he's had a really nightmare season.
Sure has.
COVID, some injuries that last night. Hopefully he's okay. But I thought that is like a bad outcome of an accident freak play as opposed to anything else. That was a great game though. Really good game. And the funniest thing was at the end of regulation, Landeskog's all pissed off because an icing gets waved off when he goes back to get it, and they go right down and he scores. That's when the hockey got – it's that, you know, Rasheed Wallace, ball don't lie. That's puck don't lie.
I'm going to tell you, man, that Colorado team, they truck. Makar and Landeskog become the fourth and fifth Avalanche players to register 40 points so far on the season. Like, and they're looking to add. Like, that's the scary thing, too. We've talked about it before. You know, big ticket players on the market, Colorado's in on this guy. They're just poised to get even better in this.
The thing that makes me interested most about them, Jeff, is what their move is going to be. You know, because of their cap situation, they probably only have the ability to do one big move. I could be wrong about this, but I think they've got the ability to have one big move. What are they going to choose to do?
Do you think that's just going to be dictated by how the goalies play down the stretch before deadline, and that's it?
Yeah, I mean, it could.
If they stumble, they go to Chicago for Fleury, and if not, they look for a forward.
Yeah, or a D. Like, I'm curious to see what they're going to choose to do. You know, in goal, like, I think my sense is, and I don't know this, but I think they really want it to work with Kemper. I do. I think they look at it like, we already gave up a first-round pick and an asset, a good young defenseman, to get Kemper. And they want it to work. They also really like Francois as their backup, but... Like, I think they want the goaltending thing to work as is. I think they would prefer, because then the other thing is, you know, you're going to, let's just say for argument's sake, you're trading for Fleury. You have to move probably Kemper to do it, right? So you're sitting there and you're saying, we gave up a first and a good player for Kemper. And now we've got to give up Kemper and whatever we've got to get, say, Fleury, right? So unless they can move Kemper somewhere else, I think they're probably hoping that'll work. And then they can go out and they can do what they have to do to get their other player. Like, to me, and this is the Giroux thing is fascinating. I I've heard the Avalanche players are kind of like, we'd love to have Giroux and. I don't want to speak for Giroux, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's kind of looked at that. But, you know, it's 8-2-5, and it's not easy. I don't think Colorado's too interested in subtracting too many contracts from their team. They have a hell of a team. So you probably need a third team to do it. Right?
Just lost Freeze, but I think the point that he's trying to make is you'll need a third team to do any Claude Giroux deal. And then it gets extra pricey. To bring him in, because you can't, unless you're moving out two significant contracts, you're not going to have the available cap space to move in Claude Giroux. Sorry, you want to finish your thought on Claude Giroux? I think what you were trying to say is if you have a third team, then it becomes even more expensive for Colorado.
It does, because you've got to pay off two teams, Philly and the other team that's helping you. You know, I have to tell you, by the way, I had to use the phone today because my iPad was not charged because I'm an idiot. And Matt Marstrom yesterday sent me a bingo card of things that happened.
Oh, yeah, he sent the same one to me,
And one of the things was Elliot's phone cuts out. So if you had that space today, congratulations.
Ding, ding. Before we let you go, want to focus on a positive. Los Angeles and the New York Islanders face off tonight.
Yep.
Team number 1,000 for Drew Doughty.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big Drew Doughty guy. I think he's great for the league. You know, the other thing too is, you know, I just think that he has not lost any of his chip on shoulder, you disrespect me side to him, right? This year.
Oh, totally.
People are writing him off the Olympic team. He's totally pissed off about it. And he goes out and he has a great season. Unfortunately, he gets hurt, but he comes back and he has a great season. He was going to be on the Olympic team. Plus, he's a great talker. You know, he's like, you know, we need like personalities like that. As long as you deliver on the ice, which he has, I'm really happy for him. I got to remember, in 2012 when they were in the Stanley Cup final against the Devils, he was so good. And I remember Peter DeBoer in one of the pre-broadcast meetings saying, you know, Drew Doughty's the best defenseman in the world right now. And, you know, I don't think he's that anymore, but I think he's still proven he's among the best. And I love watching him play, and I love listening to him talk. And you know, it's been a really good week for you know, for big moments. Like there's Yandel, there's this one. You know, I think it's good. It's been some tough times, so I'm really happy to celebrate good moments.
And him and Anderson, low-key, have been one of the best pairs in the NHL so far this season, full stop.
Very good.
You know, talk a lot about Grizzlick and McAvoy, and, you know, they're real good too, but Doughty-Anderson, that's been a real good pair. And the Kings, all of a sudden, are a lot better than we expected. Okay, enjoy the rest of your afternoon, Elliot Friedman.
You too.
Thanks.
Well, I'll speak to you later.
You and your phone, you and your iPad. Thanks, pal.
All right, bye-bye.